So you can start recording, and then you can lock it like this. So now it's locked, and then you go.
Yeah, so it's recording.
Yeah.
You have to unlock it to stop it?
Yeah, you do. You can.
So.
Can you hear me? All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Campbell Boardshare, and we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order of September 13, 2023 at 8 a.m. Heather, can you perform a quick roll call, please?
Yes. Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Foreman?
Here.
Dr. Ilana?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Wonderful. And, of course, we have Heather present as our executive director, and Seamus Monahan is our AG. And Dr. Saunders is our investigator on both cases today. Does anyone have any conflict of interest they would like to offer at this time? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to move on to item five, which is our items for board review, discussion, and possible action with our investigation file subheading A. We're going to go with our first complaint is 23-07-C is Dr. Jason Harrell. As I said, Dr. Saunders is our investigator. Mr. Bruce Crawford is present here at the meeting as counsel for Dr. Harrell, and Dr. Harrell is on the phone. So we'll start with Dr. Saunders' report.
Okay, good morning. Is DC, it's not on the phone?
No, that's the one, she got stuck in traffic, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, board members, that is correct. She's en route and said that she'll probably either call in, I did give her the call-in instructions, or be a little bit late to the meeting.
Okay, so should we...
I can proceed and then we can give her time at the end.
Yeah, we can just do it that way. Yeah, we can just change the order. I don't think Seamus will have a problem with that.
That
we hear from the complaint when she arrives. So we'll just...
That's fine.
Everybody in agreement? That's fine. Okay, cool.
All right, I'll begin. 23-7C, complaint of DC. Reading some of the information and going through her notes, it seems that the complaint was that she felt like the surgery was botched. She felt like the aftercare during a surgical procedure was... incorrect, and she felt like she was being turned away, primarily because she was being offered a second opinion, and the doctor was not listening to her concerns. I did speak with her on the phone. She was upset that she had to correct the bunion two times. She felt it should have been done properly the first time. Again, as I mentioned, she felt that Dr. Howe was not listening to her, as she was relating that there was pain from the beginning. It didn't feel right, and she was put off that on two occasions. Dr. Harrell did offer a second opinion for the patient. Going through the summary, Dr. Harrell summarized his treatment for patient DC. Initial consultation was done for management for a bunion, subsequent visits, and then surgical intervention and consents were signed. Uneventful surgery was performed, follow-up with good alignment, and normal post-operative course occurred. Approximately 2 months post-operatively, it was noted that one of the screws was loosened. It was subsequently removed in the office, and she was progressing well and did return to activity. She had follow-up visits, a couple trigger point injections were performed, and then the patient subsequently decided to have all of the hardware removed. This was done as an outpatient. She still had some pain following the removal of the hardware, and at which time Dr. Harrell did offer a second opinion. It was clear that Dr. Harrell, he puts in his notes that he did not discharge the patient, just offered another opinion if she wanted. I went through the medical records. They're well organized. They're complete. The patient was initially seen for a bunion, requested surgical intervention. Documentation of previously failed management was noted. Radiographs were noted. Patient did have a bunion. There's hypermobility documented with a tracking hallux. Typical pre-op bunion comments are noted. Patient was subsequently scheduled for a consultation, and then discussion was made for a lapidus bunionectomy on the following visits. Post-operatively, After the procedure, documentation is noted for good alignment, normal post-op course and progression. Ambulation was normal, uneventful really post-op course until the hardware. She had been compliant, sutures were eventually removed. At week four, she was already in a tennis shoe. X-rays did not show complete fusion at week four, but good alignment. At 2 months is when the proximal screw noticed some loosening. Screw was removed in the office. And then subsequently, after the removal of the screw, patient had more activity. X-rays were showing normal alignment. There was increased consolidation, normal progression. There is a documentation after that visit or such that the patient was having some continued pain and decided to have all the hardware removed, which was then performed. At 3 months, this patient was able to hike, bike. It's noted in the charts. X-rays were showing good consolidation. That patient was still complaining of some pain, and that's the point that Dr. Hill offered a second opinion. The patient was, I guess, lost the follow-up at that point. After removal of the hardware, you know, normal post-op radiographs were identified in the charting. And the financials for this were normal. And you know, my conclusion, it seemed like this patient DC developed a delayed union that may, that I think additionally had some surgery afterwards with another physician. I looked at all the x-rays. You know, she was concerned that the bunion wasn't fixed correctly. It looked like she had a pre-op bunion. The post-operative alignment was good. Hardware was appropriate. There was some loosening of the hardware. It was removed. There was good consolidation noted on the x-rays. Even after all the hardware was removed, good alignment was still maintained at this point. You know, and going through the charts, there's many reasons that the patient could develop a delayed union. Ex-smoker, she had some hardware loosening. But I don't think it's anything to do with Dr. Harrell's care. I put in my comments as well, you know, the treatment is within the standard of care, and it's not uncommon for us as physicians to offer a second opinion for patients if they're unhappy with the way it's progressing. I think that's doing a good job, so I see no problem here, and no abandonment.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know how many times, like you said, that the physicians offer to their patient a second opinion, and even preoperatively.
Sure.
A lot of people, you know, go for another opinion, and, you know, it's not anything unusual. And, you know, one other statement I would add to the validity of a solid fusion there was the fact that when he did the surgery, when he took out the hardware, you know, it was only that the first time was just that proximal screw that had to come
Correct.
Out. And then the rest of it was solid. And he noted when he looked in, when he was there in the surgical site, that the fusion was good. I mean, you know, would it have been appropriate at that time to do a CT, an MRI? Yeah, who knows? You know, exactly. So, but one of my questions that I have too is the protocol for Lapidus as far as the non-weight bearing to partial weight bearing status. Because, you know, I don't, you know, what the current thought is on early mobilization of those, because I know he did.
This was a Lapiplasty.
Okay.
So this
there
was a Lapiplasty. This wasn't the old school way.
Okay.
This was
so
one.
That's. So
they're promoting early ambulation.
Yeah, I know. Okay. That's what I just wanted to be all on the same page with. That is, you know, to progress, to be wearing a tennis shoe at week four.
Yeah.
I
do think that the patient, Dr. Hill can address
this. Yeah, of course.
I think the patient moved to a tennis shoe even prior before Dr. Harrell released her to
Well, see, that's, yes. And I think, you know, if the patient made a conscious decision to do it on her own without him.
Yeah. It's a good sign.
That's, you know, to me, that's something to be aware of, that, you know, that wasn't anything that he had directed. He'll answer that for us. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, I just want to make it clear doing the Lapiplasty that the proximal screw does loosen up sometimes. In my experience with the Lapiplasty, that does happen.
Oh,
okay. Yep. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Sanders and Dr. Campbell and Dr. Foreman. You answered all my questions. Things happen in surgery, and you just have to do the right thing, and I feel like the proper thing was performed post-operatively.
Mr. Crawford, would you like to make any remarks before we hear from Dr. Harrell?
Yeah, I can just make a couple comments. Obviously, the x-rays kind of tell the tale, so to speak, that there was a well-performed surgery and there was evidence of good consolidation. You know, obviously, as you all know, you don't know that what the real results are of a surgery until probably a year, and this lady left at about 6 months. So, we don't have any of the subsequent records. We don't. Maybe you do, but we don't. So we don't. We can't really comment on what may have happened. But clearly, if she did develop a delayed union or eventually a non-union, that is a complication of any surgery on the foot that everybody has had happen to them. So it's unfortunate that she, you know, I guess I think kind of misunderstood the intent of offering a second opinion. I mean, that's the right thing to do. If you're telling the patient one thing and the patient doesn't appear to be satisfied, then it's appropriate to offer them that, and it's not abandonment, and it's not, you know, it's unfortunate that it was kind of misinterpreted, I think. So,
yeah.
You know, Dr. Harrell's on the phone. He can answer any questions that you have, but I think it's pretty clear his care was appropriate.
And also he confirmed, too, with her vitamin D levels and, you know, labs and things confirmed that she had. Do you want me to go ahead and have Dr. Harrell now that the complaint has arrived, or should we wait and do her one more dog, Dr. Harrell?
You can do Dr. Harrell and then her, okay. And then give them an opportunity to rebut if they need to.
Okay. All right. Dr. Harrell, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
So if you want to summarize your care or if there's any concerns that you'd like to address, please go ahead.
I certainly agree with everything that has been said so far. Recently, I was at a master's forum with Priest Medical, and that commentary arose about the potential delayed union, and all of the instructors actually were in agreement that things remodel and potentially you take another x-ray in a year and it shows 100% consolidation, even though you might think that there's some delay several months into the process. But they are advocating early ambulation, and they have actually published several studies regarding ambulating people with a cam walker boot at, even initially. I wait at least 2 weeks to be more conservative.
Can you discuss your protocol for that lapoplasty?
And so I think the Lapidus is a powerful procedure, particularly with a hypermobile type of bunion. She had had a history of bunions. Her mother had a correction. And I think that is not necessarily my 100% go-to procedure, but I'm very satisfied with the Lapidus, and I've been doing it ever since I was a resident. And I'm not necessarily 100% exclusive with the Lapoplasty. I've used other systems, depending on what facility I'm working at.
So, Dr. Harrell, have you found differences between rates of non-union or delayed unions with the standard Lapidus bunionectomy versus Lapoplasty?
I think that Treece Medical has improved the instrumentation and the process of correcting the bunion, and I find that I have less potential complications or frustrations in doing the procedure. So, but I can't say that I necessarily have less non-unions or delayed unions. So.
And do you find with that too that there's, with minimal tissue dissection, and then I see you use the Stravix also to prevent adhesions, correct?
And I did not use Stravix on her.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought maybe you had.
No.
Okay.
So no, I don't necessarily use any kind of tissue augmentation or biologic to help with the healing process.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Iwano, do you have any questions for Dr. Harrell?
Hi, Dr. Harrell, Dr. Foreman.
The only question I have is, do you normally get your patients weight-bearing in a tennis shoe at 4 weeks, or do you normally wait 6 weeks?
And it depends on what the x-rays look like. If I see significant consolidation, I can progress them to a tennis shoe at 4 to 6 weeks, so it depends on the x-ray.
Okay, thank you.
I have no questions. This is Dr. Ivano.
So, Dr. Carol, this is Dr. Campbell again. So I was trying to determine within the notes was when you allowed the patient to return to the tennis shoe, because at that one visit said the patient came in with the tennis shoe, and I didn't know that. I was trying to determine if you had given the go-ahead prior to that, or if that was something that the patient made the conscious decision to go ahead and be in the tennis shoe when they came into that visit.
My note was on April 8th of 2022, and I don't recall if... So normally I would have them wait until I see that x-ray, but she was wearing a tennis shoe, so that may have been on her own decision.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We have... the complainant has arrived. There was traffic on the freeway or an accident, so we can ask that. And ma'am, we have to go by your... initials, which are DC, correct?
Correct.
And if you would like, if you'd be pleased, you can come up to the front and have a seat at the desk and have you give us your summary of your care and your concerns, please. And then the board members will have the opportunity to ask you questions.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. So when I first went to go meet Dr. Harrell, I was satisfied with everything that he told me about the Lapiplasty surgery. It seemed very promising for my situation. He knew my overall goals were to be back up and going to get about my life as soon as possible. When we had difficulty scheduling the original procedure just because of all the COVID stuff that was going on at the time. And after the procedure, everything seemed okay, seemed going all right. I explained to him that, because he kept asking me about my pain levels, I explained to him, I'm like, the pain is different, but it's not the same pain as before, it's definitely different and in a different spot. And he was like, oh, okay, so we'll just watch it. And he did a few more x-rays and things like that, and I kept going in. It seemed to be progressing okay, but I still had the same pain and the same amount of pain. We did have an issue with a screw that backed out and lots of issues with swelling. I kept my foot up. It felt like three quarters of the day, ice, and, you know, trying to move it around a little bit and things like that. We couldn't get the swelling to go down. So my question was, hey, am I allergic to the hardware? Is that a reasonable, you know, question? I didn't know. And he seemed to think it was a reasonable assumption. And we went ahead and had the hardware removed. From that point, it was kind of like starting the roof up, giving it time to heal. But that pain was still there. So I'm like, okay, I'm still getting the swelling. I'm still getting the pain. And at this point, you know, he had already told me that it was healed. And I was like, okay, well, if it's healed, why is it still hurting so much? And he shrugs his shoulders. So the last two visits we went in after he had told me, well, it's healed, we're good. He was satisfied with the x-rays, which I brought my first x-ray and my last x-ray with me in case you guys wanted to see them, because I still had a bunion when I was done. I went back to him two more times, and the last two times I went to go see him, I'm like, there's a pain here. It's not the same pain. I don't know what it is. If I asked him, you know, do I need to do other imaging? And he denied that. So I was like, okay. And he just shrugged his shoulders, said he didn't know, and that I was welcome to get a second opinion. But on the two last visits that I I went to him. So that was my cue of going, well, you obviously don't want to have any more to do with me or to fix whatever is going on, so I sought care elsewhere.
Was there any time during the course of your treatment post-surgically that you injured the foot?
No, I broke the toe of my other foot.
but no direct injury to your operative foot. Okay. Because there was a visit when you came in and you had been able to hike and bike, but you still had pain. So my question is, was the pain wasn't significant enough to why you would continue at a level of activity if you had pain?
I never went hiking. I couldn't even walk my dogs. So I never ventured out to the mountain or went hiking. I wanted to. I asked about it, but I never did. And I did pedal around the neighborhood a little bit to try and gain that movement back in my foot. It was very mild. It wasn't like I was going off-road or anything like that, no mountain biking or anything to that extent. And there was very little of that. I was just trying to get some more activities back in. I'm not used to being, tied down a lot.
Yeah.
I'm usually on the mountain like 3 or 4 days a week, and it's been 2.5 years. It's kind of...
Several weeks after the surgery, were you given range of motion exercises to do?
Yeah, he kind of told me to, do the up and down and the rotations and things like that, but nothing major.
And you have never been diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, correct?
No.
Okay. Now, Dr. Harrell was the only doctor you consulted regarding the bunion prior to the surgery?
Correct.
Okay. And I will remark to you that it is not unusual for doctors to offer to their patients if there's something in the postoperative period as the pain to offer people to have a second opinion, because that gives everyone a sense of, completeness and looking to see if there's something that's been missed or unapparent. So it's not done in a manner to brush people off. I think, hope that there wasn't that perception of that, which I think that may have happened. And your question about the allergy to the metal is certainly something that's worth discussing too. Now, when you had the hardware removed, there was also a biopsy done on the lump on the bottom of your foot that turned out to be a fibrous tissue with maybe a neuroma. Had you ever previously had history of plantar fasciitis or plantar fibromas or anything?
No.
Okay. And when you came into the discussion we were having about when did you start wearing the tennis shoe, did you wear it before you were released to do so?
If I remember correctly, I had gone in the boot, and the last time I went in the boot, I had asked him about it, and he's like, well, if you're able to, and I was, okay. So I went and bought shoes that were two sizes too big so I could cram my shoes in there, and the boot hurt too because of the swelling. So I was trying to find like something where I could get around a little bit better. Be more mobile, but
post-operative swelling can certainly be an issue. It's variable from patient to patient. And you said you had done a lot of icing and elevation and such, which is obviously really some of the best ways to attack that. And usually CAM boots help in that department to keep you mobile enough and keep that swelling down to keep you comfortable. And two, that when people have bone surgery, the bone is still remodeling and strengthening up to a year's time. So the body is a very, you know, it's an intricate process that's go on with bone healing. So that's why we don't treat x-rays. Yes, we can see that the x-ray looks good and things appear nice and consolidated. And the surgery where your hardware came out, it was noted that the site was fused. So, you know, what, you know, you trying to ascertain if CT should have been done or an MRI, you know, a lot of that depends on definitions of if the insurance company is going to accept a delayed healing or a non, you know, and all these things. So the ability to do those exams isn't always when we want to be able to do them. So those are, there's a lot of things here to think about with, you know, how all this went. So now how are you, you went on to more surgery, and how is that?
So after seeking care, the second doctor put me on a bone stem device to try and promote the healing. I'm still using that device. I'm at like almost 300 days on it now. It didn't fuse. We did a MRI and then a CT scan after the first diagnosed use, and he was still saying that it was a non-union. So, plus I still have the bunion, so we went ahead and did the bunion surgery again with an external fixator. So that was fun. I had a cast for a while. After that, rehab was a lot more difficult. I was on a scooter, and that was another thing I asked Dr. Harrell. I'm like, do I need to get a scooter or anything? And he didn't think it was necessary. So this doctor, he wanted me to use a scooter, so I had a scooter at work, scooter at home, crutches, like all of it. And he kept me in the cast quite a while, and then I moved to the boot. And then after the boot, my range of motion is just so much more less. I'm still in PT for that, and trying to regain movement in that foot. But so far, I mean, everything seems good. I hope after all the PT and everything is done, I'll regain more of my nerve. The feeling in my foot, there's a lot of numbness. I can't feel a lot of it. And again, I can't like bend the toes. I still don't trust it to go hiking, or, you know, I haven't been very adventurous with it for sure.
Okay.
So.
And I know you were noted as not being a smoker. How many years did you smoke prior? And how much?
Oh, wow. It was probably half a pack a day from like 7 years.
So between when you, so when did you quit?
When I was 24.
Okay, so you haven't smoked for quite some time.
Correct.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you. Okay.
I quit when I got pregnant with my son.
Oh, yes. A good idea not to be doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think here if I have anything else to ask you. Yeah, because you had very good vitamin D levels and things, so.
Well, I think at that point in time, I was at my best, like, physical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to the gym 4 times a week, hiking 3 times a week, bike riding 3 times a week, you know, very active, walking a couple, 3 miles a day with my dogs.
Thank you very much for answering my questions. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for the complainant?
No, I don't.
And
thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Ilano.
Thank you, Leo, and Dr. Campbell. You both, you just answered all my questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, do we have any rebuttal from Dr. Harrell or...
Oh, sorry.
Any other comments? Okay.
I don't know if he has any comments or
okay.
not.
Okay. Okay. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Not for me.
Okay. Thank you. So, it's, you know, doing surgery, there's no guarantees, and things do happen. And I think, you know, that the procedure was done appropriately. That's, you know, analyzing the needs of the patient and expectations of the patient prior seemed to have done, you know, had been done appropriately, and the surgical procedure was performed, and the loosening of the screw, as we have heard from experience with Dr. Foreman noted, and as well as Dr. Harold, that the proximal screw can work its way loose. You know, this happens, you know, in surgery quite frequently, that maybe one of the fixation components loosens, and it's, you know, there was no history of any trauma, so we can't say that that was caused by that, but this is just, you know, part of the process with that surgical procedure. And I believe Dr. Harold did indicate, you know, that the company, you know, these companies continually work to improve their product to create, you know, better outcomes. As far as the ambulation, you know, that was done within protocol of the Lapiplasty, which is different from the standard old-fashioned Lapidus procedure that required, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of non-weight bearing and had a lot higher rates of a non-union or delayed unions progressing maybe to a non-union. So, you know, inappropriateness of selecting something that would be, you know, more advantageous for the patient, I think that was the decision that was made. I think the problem came up with communication and not understanding what a reason behind offering a second opinion is. It's, you know, a complication of surgery to possibly have delayed unions and or delayed healing of a surgical site at nobody's fault. These things can just happen, and obviously the issue was further discussed or was further evaluated and treated, and you seem to be on the on a good road now, and it's I'm glad for you that things are working out. I know it's a long haul, and it's not what you expected. And we get that. But there was no, what our job is here is to determine, was there any standard of care that Dr. Harrell, that he fell below the standard of care, but I don't believe he fell below the standard of care. Again, I go back to the fact that I think it was a communication issue in understanding the reasoning behind offering you a second opinion. He did not dismiss you from the practice. It's not, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm not seeing you anymore. So I think that's where all this issue lied. You know, if that hadn't been the case and you were still with him, you still could have gone on to the same kind of thing, further surgery anyway. It's possible. So that's, in a nutshell, I mean, that's how I see it. I would ask my fellow board members to give their response at this time. Dr. Foreman?
Yeah, I see falling below the standard of care for this case. It's unfortunate that it happened, but he did not fall below the standard of care.
Dr. Ilano?
Yes. Complications occur with surgery. It's how you react to the complications and how you deal with it. Dr. Harrell took care of this in an appropriate manner. I see no violation of how Dr. Harrell treated the AO.
So obviously we're in agreement there's no breach of standard of care, so, you know, as far as action that way, but I would want to offer a letter of concern just regarding communication and making sure that the patient understands when a doctor offers a second opinion, what that means. It's not that they're dismissing someone from a practice, but making sure that everybody understands what's going on so that there is no error in that regard. Because as I say so many times, the complaints we see here at this board are based a lot in poor communication. It's really important. So my motion would be to offer a letter of concern to Dr. Harrell regarding that entity of communication. Do I have a second?
Second the motion.
Thank you. Any, it's been, a motion has been made and seconded to offer a letter of concern. Is there any discussion? And we'll take a vote on that. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. Thank you. That's ready now. Okay, so is Dr. Lewis on the phone?
Hi, this is Heather in the board office. I'm wondering if Dr. Lewis has joined.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So we are going to go on. Let me find where we are on our. This is on the under 5, subheading C, which is the initial analysis. We have W. Craig Lewis on the phone, and we received a National Practitioner Data Bank report on a malpractice issue that was settled. And of course, this was on it wasn't on the license renewal, but it was a report that was received in the board office from the National Practitioner Data Bank. So basically, it had to do with.
You don't need to discuss the actual.
Oh, we don't. That's right. So Dr. Lewis, if you would like to make any, if you have any comments or remarks that you'd like to make or things that you want us to know.
3 minutes.
Yeah, if you could do that with a 3 minute time frame, just to, if there's anything you want to add or anything that you think we should know about this that wasn't discussed in the legal document that was sent by the council, council. It was the mediation memorandum. So if you want to respond within a 3 minute time frame, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I don't know if I have much to add, but in this case was, you know, back several years ago when I first came out of residency. But the main thing I guess I would say is that the settlement was only for, I guess, the financial benefit, I guess, that the insurance had discussed with me. But as far as the case is concerned, I wanted to take it to trial and have it wipe off my record because I did not feel like it was. It was worth the case in this aspect, but and so in all sense, I guess most people say this that they don't feel like they did anything wrong, but in this case, I didn't feel like there was a case against me. But as far as the attorneys and the insurance, they recommend that I just settle for financial gain. But ultimately, I don't remember the case because it was a one-time visit. The ER back in 2018, and the case didn't get presented until 2019 or almost a year later. So I really don't remember the case much other than reviewing all the documentation that's been provided to me and provided to you guys. So as far as like memory, I don't remember the case that I have.
Yeah. Well, basically, I think what happened was, you know, you were. Some people, well, everybody gets sued who was, you know, even for one visit, it's like they throw the bowling ball down and whoever gets, you know, whoever's in the way gets hit. And so, you know, and the fact, too, that there had been a workman's comp case settled prior for the patient having had his, asserting his own negligence in there. So I would, my recommendation is to, not take any action on this, or no opening of any investigation against this, as there are.
Seconded.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Foreman. Appreciate that very much. That was good. it's been moved and seconded to not take any action on this or set up an investigation against Dr. Lewis on this question of possible unprofessional conduct. It's been seconded. Do I have any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Lewis. Appreciate you,
thank you
calling in. Thanks so much.
No problem.
All right. Okay. Heather has the complainant for Dr. Rosales' case. He is on the line. Okay. And
again, you go responding, complaining.
No, he's not here. Dr. Rosales isn't here. I'm going to move it to because I have questions.
Okay.
So
we just want to continue with that.
Right. Yeah. So we'll go ahead and since the fellow's on the phone, we should hear from him.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
Okay. All righty. We're going to go back here to. Our second complaint, which is 23-09-C, which is Mark Anthony Rosales, and Dr. Saunders is our investigator. So we're going to hear from Dr. Saunders, and then we do have the complainant on the line. So we will hear from the complainant once Dr. Saunders has gotten his report, and we've asked questions if we have any. So, Dr. Saunders.
Okay. Hello again. This is a claim against Mark Rosales, 2309-C. This is kind of an interesting case because the patient actually wasn't actually seen. And the patient can speak for himself in a moment, but, you know, the complaint came about. He did not like the feel of Dr. Rosales' office. He was getting continually billed for a no-show fee / cancellation fee, which he thought was unprofessional. He thought the office was just strictly run unprofessional. The whole complaint is just not a good look for our profession. Just in general, I'll start with saying that. I did speak with AO. He's actually a retired medical professional. And, you know, he'll speak for himself as well, but, you know, he didn't necessarily want anything negative to happen to Rosales, but he just didn't want to pay this unnecessary fee, and that's what stirred up the complaint. And I did speak with him, and he went on to describe what had happened. He was a previous patient from 5 years ago. He came back in for a new problem. And as he got to the office, once he was brought back into the room, and on the shuffling back to get him into the room of the office, the staff kept having him sign some paperwork and making him read some forms. That he was going to have to do a mandatory vascular examination, have mandatory x-rays before the doctor would even be seen. And the staff was making him sign the waivers that it could potentially cost him up to, I don't remember the figure, $800 or something like that. And this, the complainant AO, you know, didn't feel comfortable with this. He had conversation with the staff, and the staff replied that it was mandatory. So we ended up just leaving the office. He didn't like the professional conduct of the office, and he wanted to be seen first, find out why he needed these exams. And, you know, he feels like, well, if the doctor really feels like I need these exams, I'll probably get them done. But they were making him get the exams before he was actually being seen. So he left the office. He felt that the office was kind of unprofessional. And the fact that he got billed $75 for a no-show fee disturbed him. He reluctantly paid it subsequently bills later. I did speak with Dr. Rosales. He feels he's justified billing AO because he left without being seen. He took up the staff's time, he took up the staff's space, and felt like he was justified that monies. You know, we had a conversation, he went on saying decreased revenue, increased time, failed business structures, things like that. He deserved the income. I did ask him to clarify his protocol for new patients when speaking with him, that they get a PAD screen and x-rays. And he says of patients of a certain age or a trauma or getting a procedure done that they have to have a PAD screen and x-rays prior to being seen to expedite time and flow. I went as far as beyond and says, do you have them get the testing done before they're even back, before you even go into the office? And he said yes. I was giving him an opportunity to comment on that. This is done by the staff prior to being seen into the room to expedite flow. He also relates that he did not have the opportunity to discuss rationale with his patient because this patient actually left. I think there was some crossover in the hallway, but nothing was done as the AO was leaving. I did not have a record of a previous visit. There's no insurance information presented to the board. There's no unsigned ABN forms that were done. There were in the chart some office notes by the staff. Dr. Rosales put a quick note in his room. The patient did not want to abide by office protocol for procedures and walked out. There is a staff note by management saying that the patient declined the PAD and x-rays. The staff wrote that they advised the patient that these are requirements prior to the doctor arriving to be seen, or prior to the doctor being seeing the patient. The patient did pay the $75 fee. My conclusion, obviously, this patient had a poor experience. He had to seek medical care elsewhere. Obviously, this could have been avoided or easily rectified based on the staff communication. I had some concerns regarding the protocol, the communication that all new patients get PADs, testing, and x-rays without a clinical exam. I think that the standard of care is that the patient should be evaluated and then ancillary diagnostics will be ordered if they're deemed medically appropriate by the physician. Obviously, just to avoid overutilization, don't order tests that are unnecessary. The no-show fee was charged. I think that's above the standard cost in my practice. I think $75 is above and beyond. That's more than an office is if they were an established patient. I feel it's unreasonable in this case. I think the patient did not feel comfortable with the office presentation, the protocols, etc., and just decided to leave, seek medical care elsewhere. The trust was lost. I don't think it's a no-show. I don't think it's a cancellation. I think the patient just didn't like the professionalism of the office. It's sort of like, you know, your retail store. You don't want to buy something. You don't buy something. You don't get charged for a visit.
Exactly. You're the mechanic. You don't have to do what.
Yeah, it's just a bad look. Yeah. All the way around. I spoke to Dr. Rosales about that, and even when I asked him, I said this could have been avoided if you didn't charge him the fee. He's like, well, I'll do that fee. He really feels justified that he can speak for himself. You know, overhead, blah blah blah, business models. I think that's irrelevant to this cause. Run your business better. And that's really all I have for this. There's not too much more.
Yeah. Well, and the comment about overutilization is really important. And, you know, too, I mean, you think about over-radiating people.
This was bilateral x-rays, yeah.
Yes.
This was all for an ingrown toenail.
Right. And doing a pat net, yeah, you know, the only reason, as we know, to do x-rays on an ingrown toenail is if you got a kid with a terribly infected nail and you want to rule out osteo. But you're going to examine them first.
Yeah, look at them first.
Yeah.
You feel a pulse or not. You feel
right.
Pulse in order to
or a subungual or exostosis.
Sure.
Or
there
something.
Are reasons for an x-ray.
Right. And then this PADNET thing, too, is, okay, who's performing the test? Is it Dr. Rosales? Is his staff? Are they properly trained? You know, they could cause harm if they're not doing that properly with the cuffs, if they're not placing them correctly or not pat. You know, there's all kinds of scenarios that can happen here. And my question to you, Dr. Saunders, is could you determine what was this Carol, let's see, staff member's name? Where'd she go?
Well,
Cynthia
Burke. You don't need to use the name.
Okay, well, the staff.
CB from the
okay,
staff.
So could you determine, is she like a front office staff? Is she an MA? Is she a PA? I mean, does she have,
I think she was the manager.
The office manager?
The office manager.
Okay. That's different because that could be a...
not the credentials to be dictating patient
care.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, you know, this patient was never seen to order a test. It wasn't like a PA. It wasn't even a back office person that examined the patient first, says, hey, I don't feel pulses. This was walking to the room. They were having them sign the forms.
Yeah.
So the patient was actually never evaluated by any staff member.
No. Right. Yeah, there's no...
You know, if you had a true nurse in there and says, hey, I don't feel pulses, I think we should get a test done first, maybe that's a little bit potential. I spoke to Dr. Rosales. I honestly asked him, I go, do you do this for all patients? He goes, of a certain age or of certain trauma, he goes, I've been burned before, and I know to order tests on everybody. And I was like, you know, I gave him an out to try to say if he does this for everybody, he does.
Well, and
that's his protocol.
Yeah, and it's there's conflict here because of what the staff member says to the complaint, and then what Dr. Rosales writes back to us in the response to your report
right.
is, oh, I never tell them it's mandatory.
What?
You know, so here we go.
There, yeah.
You know, here we go. It's not they're not on the same page, and I think it really created, you know, it could, you know.
I got
there,
the
there's
impression.
A lot of yeah, there's a lot of issues that could have come out of this.
I get the impression that he just tries to speed up flow in order to test that he thinks he's going to need. That's what I got.
Yeah.
Okay. Does he make a considerable amount of money doing that?
You know, yeah.
You know, if you have a volume, you can make some money doing that.
Yeah.
You know, you order tests that need to be done and you get compensated for it. I don't know. Actually, I don't do the patents in my office. I refer out for the fast shipping, but you may make $30, $40 on it. I don't actually know.
Yeah, I don't think they're, I had one. I mean, I don't think they're not the money maker.
Correct.
And even. Things that people thought they were going to be in. Plus, you can't do the reading. You got to, if you have it in the office, you have to, it goes out to somebody else. Like I had, it was somebody at Arizona Heart that read mine.
You're supposed to write it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's how it was done.
For the record, would you mind discussing, you know, if you believe there's any excessive fee issue for the $250 office visit?
This patient was charged a $75 no-show fee.
Right.
I thought that was excessive for a no-show cancellation fee. In fact, I never actually bill them. I think it's the quickest way to lose a patient is to bill a no-show fee. The second worst is to bill this fee and then this patient bad dogs and doesn't refer his friends to you anymore,
yeah.
Which he always going to do or not do. It's the worst thing you can do for your practice. But I think if you are going to choose $75 to try to make that a better patient, like some docs do, hey, just give me some courtesy, give me a note. I'm going to charge you for $25. Some of them will pay it. Sometimes you waive it. But $75, I think, is very expensive.
Well, I was just, you know, the other day I was at my, had to have a test done, and the office protocol for the doctors is if you miss two patients and not two appointments where you didn't cancel within 24 hours, you are removed from the practice.
Yeah.
And for a surgical procedure or procedure done in the office, not canceling before there's a $50 cancellation
yeah.
fee, which, and I feel that's very appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that gets involved to do
right.
those surgical procedures and things like that.
Right, but for an appointment when the person shows up, it by definition, it was not a no-show.
Correct, nor a cancellation.
Just left
because you didn't like the practice.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and the fact, too, that there's no insurance stuff in here. Is he regular Medicare? Because if he was an HMO or all this kind of stuff, that's what this presenting these ABNs. Doesn't make sense.
Well, I just said that because if you were going to bill insurance, there was no documentation
yeah.
of insurance.
Right.
I believe AO does have insurance, Medicare proper, but you know, sometimes you show up to the office, they don't have a referral. You've turned out, you thought it was Medicare, and now there are all these replacements, and all of a sudden now you need a referral to be seen, and the patient's at the door and saying, well, if you want to bill your insurance, you need a referral. You don't have one, you have to leave.
Yeah.
Is that a no-show?
No.
No, they're there. You just, the paperwork wasn't there. You can, but you shouldn't bill them.
No.
You know, just because you don't document. Some of those patients will pay self-pay,
yeah.
or you just reschedule.
Exactly. So.
And no one knows anymore what insurance they even have.
You know, that's very true.
It's the truth.
There's so many out there, and people don't understand, and they, yeah. Right. And every office can't know everything about every insurance, so. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, I don't.
Dr. Yolano.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Saunders.
Hi.
You know, your comment about this being a bad case in our profession, I wholeheartedly agree on that thing, your comment. What I'd like to know is, are you aware of any statute that a test that is recommended has to be done before a doctor has even evaluated them, as Dr. Rosales is doing here?
I can only speak ethically that I would say that's just inappropriate. I don't know of anything to be done. You know, sometimes it's helpful in a trauma case for the patient to bring their x-rays with you from the ER or something like that. If the patient did have a fall, maybe you can have an x-ray done beforehand just to speed up time, you know, but I don't know of any real prerequisite for that. And then, you know,
yeah.
if you're in my office, I mean, I would I do my own x-rays, but if I was going to have my staff do it, I have to see the patient first to figure out what x-rays you want. You know?
Correct. Also, Dr. Rivella should also offer if they wanted to do it at another facility. I mean, he should have it written down that if they don't want to have the test done, he can write it straight and have it done at another facility if they're not comfortable.
I think what would have stopped, the patient just should have been seen first, then you decide what test you want to order.
Yes, I agree.
And then you can decide if you want to do it there or not. But just
evaluation has to be performed because you even know what test to be done.
That's good. Right.
You can't have a mandatory test without even seeing the patient.
That's what we're saying here.
Yeah, that's the only comment. Thank you, Dr. Sutton.
Yeah.
Well, we have our complainant. Is he on the phone?
Yes.
So we need to hear from our complainant. Thank you, sir, for being patient, and your initials are AO, that's how we refer to you that way, so please, if you could summarize for us what happened and your concerns.
Yeah, I will. Thank you for allowing me to be here this morning. Dr. Sanders really summarized this quite well. I will footnote this and say that I am a retired periodontist. I mean, I've treated patients for 40 years. Anyway, long story short, I just felt like I was kind of railroaded into a bunch of treatments that there was no discussion. There was absolutely no one looked at my toe. I was in pain. My chief complaint was I was in pain, and nobody really listened to that. And, nobody asked me to take my shoe or my sock off. And so I was seated by a person, I guess it was identified as an office manager or someone like that, perhaps. And I was presented with a form that said, your examination is going to be $250. You're responsible for the balance of this, regardless of what Medicare pays. You're responsible for the balance of this. And I said, okay, in the back of my mind. And then she proceeded to say, well, you also need a peripheral artery circulation examination. Dr. Rosales recommends this. And I said, well, you know what? No, I'm not going to have that right now. I don't know what's going on. This is for an ingrown toenail. Okay, we're not talking about a carcinoma or a major surgery or anything like that at this point without anybody looking at me. And so she kind of talks out to somebody who's standing in the hallway behind me. He doesn't want that. and she says also too. Dr. Rosales wants x-rays of both of your feet. Well, okay, I got an ingrown toenail on one toe. and I said, no, I don't want this I don't want the excessive radiation, without any kind of explanation whatsoever. And she yells out to the hall, well, he doesn't want that either. So at this point, okay. I'm thinking, what kind of professionalism is this? They're selling me, I'm already up to, $500-$600 of goods for an ingrown toenail. And if they just take a look at my toe and just clip it or fix it, or to tell me what is needed, tell me why the peripheral artery, the peripheral circulation test was needed, or is there a pulse in my leg? I'm a pretty active guy, even though I'm 74 years old. I mean, I hike, I walk, I hike the Grand Canyon. I mean, if there's a problem, let me know. If you can do an exam, listen to the pulse in my foot and see if there seems to be a problem. I mean, we're talking about an ingrown toenail here. We're not talking about, a benign growth or something like that. I mean, it's just, I just felt railroaded and very, very uncomfortable. And I'll have to say another side note of this, too, is that the treatment of the ingrown toenail would be in addition to this $500 or $600 of pre-required tests. And, you know, and I know that Medicare may not cover treatment for an ingrown toenail. So, I mean, we're getting up to $800, $1,000 for an ingrown toenail. And, you know, I'm on a fixed income. This is kind of peripheral to the whole thing. But I just felt like no one listened to me. No one looked at my toe, and I felt like I was being railroaded, and I was in pain, and no one cared about that part of it. And then, you know, of course, I just said, well, I'm leaving. And I told the assistant in the room that I'm leaving, and I walked out the hallway. And Dr. Rosales was kind of prancing up and down the hall there. I don't know what was going on there, but he could have very easily been in the operatory and just looked at my toe and said, we need these things. And then the front desk looked at me, and I said, well, I'm leaving. And everybody had a befuddled look on their face. And I'm thinking, is this what you do to everybody? You present these kinds of things to people that come into your office? You know, I mean, wow, where did you get this kind of a practice management situation? This is what's going on in the back of my mind. I mean, I just felt like it was I was being held hostage. And even if Medicare had paid for these tests, I am the controller of what I spend my Medicare money on. This isn't money that is just thrown, tossed out randomly. This is money that somebody is having to pay, and whether it be Medicare or myself. And I just felt that that's totally unprofessional, inappropriate. And I enjoyed seeing Dr. Rosales 5 years earlier. I think he's got a great personality. That time I had a toenail that had grown and thickened and all that, and he trimmed it up, and we had a relaxing conversation, and there was no presentation of peripheral artery disease or anything like that. But this was a totally different protocol where I was seen by, in my opinion, someone perhaps with a high school graduation certificate, and that's about it. And there was no evaluation by anybody that had any credentials whatsoever. And not only that, I guess as a final note, and I'll end with this. So I didn't pay the bill. I told him, I wrote back with a letter that, consumer rights in Arizona, if you don't want to have the treatment done, you don't have to have it done. You have a right to refuse treatment. And so I'm refusing treatment here by walking out and telling them that I don't want treatment done. And I think that two or three days later, I got a bill for $75 for a no-show, as we talked about. And then that became $85 because I didn't want to pay the bill. And then they sent me to a collection agency, or they were threatened a collection agency, and so finally I paid the bill so that I wouldn't go to the collection agency, because we know that that's a sore place to be. So anyway, it was just a very, I'm very disappointed in what's happened. That's my thoughts. So thank you for hearing me, and that is my thoughts.
Thank you, Dr. Sir. I do have some questions. So I'm glad you answered it. I mean, all my questions you gave when you summarized there. But so in the contract that you signed, and it was for no shows and canceled, which you were not. So they ended up charging you, they added interest onto it?
Yeah.
Because that wasn't in the, anything in the chart. There was, I don't remember seeing
the contract does not say $10.
There was nothing in the contract that said about this increase of $10.
Okay, there was, after I didn't pay the bill, after two billings, I think they had, after one or two billings, they added a $5.
Like a
secretarial, a surcharge, secretarial fee, you know, time fee for submitting another bill, and then they add a second, and then the next billing cycle they added a second charge of $5 for secretarial fee for again not paying the bill. So it totaled $85, and that's what I paid them.
Okay, and sir, you mentioned that you had seen him 5 years prior, and there was no, Dr. Saunders indicated that there was no medical record from that visit 5 years ago, and by state, you know, he should have had those records. There should have been something in your chart. Maintenance of that mm-hmm. of that visit should have been there.
Can I say one thing to
sir,
that too?
Sure.
Yeah. Because it said the examination for an existing patient was $150 for an existing patient, but for a new patient, $250. And I guess there's an argument whether I was a new patient or an existing patient.
But, yeah.
Again, I felt I was being railroaded again. But anyway, but that's beside the point.
Well, Medicare guidelines, I believe it's after 2 or 3 years.
3 years.
3 years, you're considered a new patient by Medicare guidelines.
Okay.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, and
no problem.
I agree with you. I think that's kind of, you know, you were a patient before. I mean, if it had been 10, 15 years, that might be a different story because a lot could change in someone's history. And my other question is, you have absolutely no signs or symptoms of PVD to need a PAD and PADNET test, correct? I mean, well, of course, they didn't even. Then you have no signs or symptoms of peripheral vascular disease, and they wanted to do this.
Well, I don't know. I hiked 13 miles in the Grand Canyon about 6 months ago. I mean, I'm pretty active.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's,
Sir, your family physician, your PCP, took care of this problem for you, correct?
Well, I saw my family physician, and he said yes. He looked at it, he listened to the pulse in my foot and in my ankle, and he said, you know, it took him about 30 to 60 seconds. He said, yeah, we can do an avulsion, and I had a lumbar laminectomy coming up at Barrows down in Phoenix about a month later. And he was going to do this a month later, and I canceled that appointment because I didn't want to have a complication of the possible infection, postoperative infection or something like that, interfering with the lumbar laminectomy that was going to be done. So I went to Walmart and bought at least for a temporary solution. I was looking for a temporary solution. I soaked my foot in water, and I found that the toenail was kind of jutting up, jagged on the edge, and I clipped that toenail, and to be honest with you, it's been comfortable ever since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this has been about two and a half months later. So that's kind of where I am, but I probably will get the laminectomy is behind me now. It went great, and like I say, that was done at Barrows, and so I will get my primary care. He said he would do the avulsion of the toenail. I've got a thickened toenail and a discolored toenail. I'll get that done at some point. I just didn't want to introduce another competing procedure with that laminectomy that was a super important surgery. So
sure.
That's where I stand with that.
Oh, and I did have another question, sir. How long did you wait before you left the office? I mean, did you sit there for 5 minutes, 20 minutes, or?
Well, I left after being presented with the three, you know, the $250 exam fee and the $120 peripheral circulation test. And I don't remember if they even quoted me a fee for x-rays of both feet. I was probably sitting in the operatory for, I would say, 5 to 8 minutes, maybe something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ioana, do you have any questions for the complainant?
I have no questions.
No questions for me, Dr. Ioana.
Okay. Well, of course, we don't have Dr. Rosales here, and I have some questions that we need. There are some questions, I believe, that need to be asked about this practice that he's doing, because I definitely have concerns. I don't know if you all are concerned about this behavior, but I am. And obviously the complainant is a good historian and is well aware of what was going on there. So I would like to just continue the case and its investigation status and require Dr. Rosales' presence at the next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, you could direct staff, you could direct Heather to subpoena Dr. Rosales if necessary.
Yeah, and in that motion too, I would, if necessary, to direct Heather, our executive director, to subpoena him to be present for that meeting. So everybody understand the motion? Pardon me, Dr. Foreman?
He said.
Oh, thank you. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to continue case 23-09-C to the next meeting for purposes of questioning Dr. Rosales. And giving the opportunity, if necessary, to Heather Broaddus, our executive director, to subpoena Dr. Rosales for his presence at that meeting. So, any other discussion on the motion that's been made and seconded? Hearing none, we'll take our vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right.
He does not have counsel on this case.
I know. That's a choice people make. Thank you very much, sir.
Can I say one other thing, too? Please.
Heather will, she can send you information as to when that case will be continued to, and then at that time, if you have other, please, bring your other comments at that time. That would be great.
Well, I would. Can I get my $85 back? Can I have that requested to get that money back? I think that's fair.
We don't have that authority, but that will be something that will be addressed at that time. So,
okay.
It could happen.
Okay.
I'm not going to,
Right.
We get
okay.
it.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, guys. See you next time.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good day.
All right. Where are we here, guys? Oh, let's go back to our minutes, which is 4. That's from August the 9th, 2023, our general session board meeting minutes. I do not have any additions or corrections. Do either of you gentlemen have any additions or corrections to those minutes?
Nope.
No corrections or additions for me.
Okay, great. So, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept our general session board meeting minutes from August the 9th of 2023 as written.
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded to accept our general session board meeting minutes from August the 9th, 2023. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. All right. As we go down the list here. Okay, so we have two license applications. The first is Creston Alicia. She is applying for a regular licensure. Hang on a second.
It's not something we want to do.
Find
it's
that. Everything is complete. She's paid her fee. Oh, there she is. Okay. Anyway, completed her residency on the 30th of June, so that's all done. Everything else is in good stead here. So does anyone have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept the initial application for regular licensure as her doctor's application is complete and fees are paid, and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the application for Dr. Kristen Alicia, or Alicia Kristen. Reversed her name, so I'm sorry about that. Apologize. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Then our next applicant is Dr. Sean Lehman. He is applying via comedy. And there was no expiration date on his information from British Columbia, his licensor, but it has been noted. Heather reached out to him and got the information. He has his license in British Columbia expires on February the 29th of 2024. So everything in his application is complete. Does anybody have any questions or concerns there? Okay. Hearing none, I will go ahead and make a motion to accept the completed application via comedy for Dr. Sean Lehman. Fees are paid, and to issue the license upon the payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to accept the application of Dr. Lehman via comedy. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. All righty. Executive Director's Report, number six.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Board Members. So renewals are complete. The last day to renew was August 31st. A total of 458 renewals were processed. We had about 11 licensees indicate that they're retiring and about 15 licensees that allowed their license to expire. I do still have two renewals pending that I still need continuing education submitted for, so I'll keep the board updated on that. The APMA is inviting podiatrists to apply to serve on an APMA committee. The application deadline is October 1st, and a podiatrist can submit an application on the APMA's website if interested in serving. I have included the FY25 budget submission. I can answer any questions on that. And only one complaint has been added to the complaint log since I sent board materials, and I can answer any questions on that. And I do have one last update. Central Services Bureau, which is the agency that does accounting for a lot of the smaller boards and agencies, has proposed new fee structure for agencies. And so this has come about probably about 2 months ago, and I met with them to go over podiatry's new fee structure mid-August, and basically they want to raise podiatry's rates by 65%. The board cannot sustain that increase for more than this fiscal year. So basically, all of the executive directors that I've spoken to there are some agencies where CSB wants to raise their rates by 200%. So, you know, we've had several meetings with them, with the director of ADOA, the comptroller, CSB administration. I've been in, not just me, several executive directors have been in contact with the governor's office, OSPB, and so forth. So I still don't have the ISA. I've not signed anything. So my plan right now is to just decrease fees where I can. So I have started taking courses for the age, for the state's accounting system to get access to that, to do some of the accounting on my end. You know, and that's part of the reason why you got that email regarding I'm going to start approving board member payroll, because that'll decrease part of the fee. I'm going to take some of the budget back just to decrease fees where I can. And then depending on that, and just because of the uncertainty of it, I did speak with Dr. Campbell, and I have decided to furlough one day a month to help decrease fees. And the furlough day will be towards the end of the month. It says the end of the month always seems to be a little bit slower time for the board. So that's where I'm at with that, and I'll keep the board updated. But again, I have not signed any kind of a contract with CSB yet. I haven't gotten an official one. When I do, I will definitely present it to the board.
Are we able to raise our fees for the...
Well, Dr. Foreman, and that issue did come up, and that is CSB's suggestion. You know, well, we're raising our fees, so you guys need to raise your fees. Well, I don't believe that that is justified to raise our, you know, to make the podiatry board's licensees pay because another agency is increasing their fees. I don't know that I can justify that to the governor's office without first trying to decrease fees where I can. You know, and the board can sustain this. Again, I have not signed an ISA. The board's fund is fine through FY24, but beginning in FY25, there will be a structural imbalance. So, I would suggest, you know, in 2025, 2026, that the board look at increasing fees at that point after I have done what I can to decrease, you know, costs for the board at that time.
Okay.
Because I know that the last couple of times, you know, I know that the board did go for a fee increase in 2020. And then a few years prior to that, when Ryan Edmondson was the executive director, he tried to increase fees, and both times were denied. So I just, you know, that was kind of my thought process on it. But if, I mean, the board can do what they want, and if the board wants to go through the rulemaking process to increase fees, you know, we can definitely address that at another meeting, and I will do whatever the board directs me to do.
Heather, I got a question. What was the last time a fee for an increase?
About 20 years.
I remember.
The last time...
20 years.
That's what I remember, because I did conduct quite extensive research before bringing this to the board to raise fees. And you may not have been quite on the board yet, Dr. Ulano, but it came up in 2019, and I believe that the governor's office denied that part of the rulemaking process to increase fees in 2020. It was early 2020, I believe. I would have to go back and look to get you an exact number, but I do remember it was about 20 years. And I'm talking renewal fees, not initial application fees. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, I think it's a long time coming, 20 years. Mm-hmm. Things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, if our fees are going up, I mean, we have evidence to show that we're not going to be solvable in 25, so mm-hmm. we have to raise fees. There's no other, you know, I mean, because there's nothing else we could do.
Yeah. And I know if you go on the Federation of Podiatric Medical Board website, I think we have that in the database where you can see what each state charges mm-hmm. for their fees. And we really are low compared to a lot of states.
And Madam Chair, board members, if I may, there is new administration at the governor's office. So I think that may help with the board, you know, requesting to increase fees. But I would like to say, too, that the governor's office is only the approval part of it. Only to approve that rulemaking package to go to the governor's regulatory review council. The governor's regulatory review council is the entity that approves, or does not approve the actual rule package itself. And you may remember, you know, the board going through this with the temporary application fee, where the governor's office approved that fee that the board was requesting, but then the governor's regulatory review council did not approve that fee, and we had to decrease the fee. So that council has not changed. It's still comprised of the same members. So that's another reason why I was kind of thinking to decrease fees first, because that administration has not changed. But again, I'm willing to put this on an agenda for the board to look at the rulemaking process to increase fees. You know, we could address this at the October meeting, November meeting, whatever the board wishes.
Heather, do you know, how did they base that increase?
Well, that's the question a lot of us are asking.
You know, that's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. You know, was it just somebody started picking straws or what?
A lot of the executive directors, like I said, I've questioned the methodology behind it. I've asked for a complete breakdown of, you know, how much time it takes to enter in a board member payroll and how much, you know, that person entering it makes. Because as basically boards are the clients, and per statute, the board should only, or agency should only be paying for those people's salaries and equipment necessary to conduct, you know, their duties. So it should be very transparent. And in prior years, agencies have gotten a complete breakdown like that. Well, they're refusing to provide that information at this point. So, you know, everything is still very uncertain. I don't know what's going to happen if they will maintain the 65 to 200% increase for some agencies. I'm just not sure. But to be on, you know, the safe side, I've decided to just try to cut back where I can for now.
Anybody have any other comments or questions for Heather? Okay. So, and you did the complaint.
I appreciate your work, and you're taking a furlough for one day a month.
Yes.
Wow, thank you.
I'm happy to do it.
Now that's a, I mean, you know, how much is it, what's on the budget that for, you know, that our pittance of reimbursement to board members, what is that per year?
Well, it's $50
right,
per day.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, you know, each board member gets $100 a month. So it's very minimal. It's like $3,600 a
okay,
year.
Okay, that's what it is per year.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty minimal. Well, and the board is, you know, only has three members right now. So that cost would go up if we had a full board,
which we need anyway. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But I do know that a lot of agencies do a lot of the accounting. So, you know, I'm willing to learn that. I'm willing to do what it takes to start doing some of that on my end. I don't have a problem with that at all. And being a one-person agency, I can never do all of the accounting because they do have checks and balances.
Right, that they have to have.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's see. Let's move on to 7, which is summary of current events. And I don't believe we have anything in that category. 7 is our call to the public, and the public is gone. There's no one left on the telephone. Discussion and possible, or 9, discussion and possible action for items for future meetings. So, Heather, could we go ahead and put that on mm-hmm. there about the rules mm-hmm. and the fee increase?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Madam Chair, board members. So, I will start doing research, and if I'm ready to, you know, present anything to the board in October, I will put it on that meeting. Otherwise, it may be November.
Because yeah, I think October looks pretty busy, right?
The board agenda, yes. But I would like to, you know, go back to what I researched back in 2019 and, you know, look at all of those numbers again, compared, you know, to jurisdiction and so forth.
Yeah. opinion. I'll have, you know, look at and see if, I mean, like I said, you know, Russ Stoner, if he's got the on, I think it is on our website, on that, on the Federation website about what license fees are in other states. If not, he could do a call for information and get that from people. And when they increase their fees, I mean, just any kind of information you'd want, he could do that for you. Alrighty, so our next meeting, October 11, 2023, at 8 a.m. Does anyone have anything else they'd like to add in here, since we've met all our agenda items? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting of September 13, 2023 at 9:30 a.m.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.
So. Have a good day.
And happy Rosh. Well,
good day, everyone.
So are you making big dinner?